Live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios, it's the Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha Insurance. Now, back to your hosts, Rick Cleveland, Mark Lasseter, and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome back to PSR in Radio Alabama. Been a big week in high school football. It's been a big week for college football, because high school football players had their second signing day, and all of us Auburn fans got Georgia on our mind as we lose a big one. I think the biggest loss of all, seriously, was losing George Pickens to Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. Let's talk to John Garcia. And nobody knows it better than John Garcia. I was talking to a buddy of mine who... ESPN guy that's been on our show many times in the early years of our show, and he said, boy, Rick, when you get John Garcia on, you get one of the top young guys in our business. And so, John, that's a compliment coming from the top, buddy.
And, wow. And I appreciate it.
And that's good stuff. And I know as an Auburn guy, as a guy whose son played there and who thinks a lot of that school, losing George Pickens to Georgia, to me, is the one big loss nationwide on the board, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, I think on the surface, obviously, a massive loss, just verbatim, right? Five-star, number one type player in the state, arguably the best receiver in the country. Anytime you lose a guy like that, it stings. But with the way it went down, committed nearly 2 years, so familiar with Gus Malzahn, so familiar with fellow incoming prospect Bo Nix, and really saying all the right things along the way, and if anything, re-emphasizing his commitment once Gus Malzahn said, hey, I'm going to call the plays. Took multiple visits to Auburn down the stretch, including Sunday night after his Tennessee official visit. We're told he was on campus for 6 hours on Sunday, and then 3 days later, signs with the Georgia Bulldogs. So I think the way it went down stings just as much as the on-paper look of an elite prospect changing his mind. So I think that was really tough for Auburn. But hey, Auburn really had a good day other than that. Added a lot of prospects who were on the bubble with other schools. Charles Moore, a top 100 defensive tackle. Octavius Brothers, a dynamic athletic linebacker out of South Florida who was really a late riser, and everybody kind of went in on there at the 11th hour, and then satisfied a big need with Kamar Bell, a big interior offensive lineman from South Georgia, Colquitt County High School, one of the top high schools in the South. So I think that sting is rough, but it could have been a lot worse. And then you added Mark Anthony Richards, who, you know, when you look back at this class, especially with Pickens not in it, outside of Bo Nix, this could be the most, you know, long-standing offensive contributor on this commitment list. So it was a really good day for Auburn if you take that away, but obviously hard to take that away when he's such a unique talent and he was committed for so long.
Without a question, when you also look on the Alabama side of things, I think that one of their biggest gets was Ishmael Sopcher from Louisiana, going into Louisiana's backyard and getting yet another strong player from the state of Louisiana. I want to say that Nick Saban knows exactly that he's playing chess and not checkers, even though he hasn't named a lot of his new assistant coaches as specific position coaches. They just want to be a part of the program that continues to put guys in the NFL on that next level. But Alabama, again, has the number one signing class in the country.
Yeah, you know, and the perception there was kind of up and down, too. It was kind of interesting, I think, because Alabama signed so many kids in December, 24, that no matter what happened, achieving this number one class wasn't going to take a lot. So they did get Sopcher, but, you know, they lost out on some guys that they were on the bubble for, much more so than Auburn did. So I think perceptionally it was kind of an up-and-down day, even though is it possible to have an up-and-down day if you clinch the number one class in America? So that's where perception and reality, I think, are fun to gauge from any perspective. But getting Sopcher was huge. You know, not only a position of need, heck, Bama signed six defensive linemen, and I think – almost half of them are going to have to contribute in some way, shape, or form now, which is a lot to ask those guys. So you got to get elite prospects, and I think four of them were in the top 100, including Sopcich. But to do it against LSU for a Louisiana kid, you know, Ed Orgeron did a really good job in the state this cycle. Every elite kid, you know, for the most part, I think only two top 100 kids from Louisiana elected to go elsewhere, and they both ended up at Alabama. So if you're an LSU fan, that's the one school where you're like, okay, I mean, if we go 4 of 6 against Bama, you'll take that. And that's what Ed Orgeron actually did this cycle. So that led a lot of people to think that Sopcich was going to follow along and end up at LSU. But if there's one school, one area where we've seen in the last few years where Nick Saban doesn't miss, it's Amit High School in that area of Louisiana. That's where Devontae Smith came from as a five-star. Now, a couple of years later, Ishmael Sopcich comes from there. I think Pete Golding, one of the assistants that did carry over and stay with Alabama, was big there. And Sam Petito, an off-the-field guy who is from that area, who Devontae Smith told me once was a father figure to him. His ties there, obviously strong. And Nick Saban, obviously, having coached at LSU and recruited Louisiana forever, all those things combined made it tough on LSU with Sopcich. And that was a big win there down the stretch, because if Bama didn't add him, then the perception would have all been kind of negative, even though Bama maintained verbal commitments who were looking elsewhere, like Byron Young, who may be better than Ishmael Sopcich, and then Keelan Robinson, the scat back out of Washington, D.C., who was fresh off of an official visit to USC. So it was a strong day for Bama, obviously, clinching the number one class. Hard to look negatively about it, but some people did because of some of the bubble guys that Bama didn't end up with, but obviously number one speaks for itself.
We're talking to John Garcia of 24/7 Sports. You know, John, when you look at the entire picture of recruiting in the Southeastern Conference, and we're going to concentrate on the SEC, I know that everybody, and I think including 24/7, I think you guys picked Georgia second, and I think that's legitimate. But I think the one that's made the most headway, and Mark, you and Corey can agree or disagree here, I think the person that you better keep your eye on, because he's got so many resources, because he's got the facilities, and there's nothing going to be held back in College Station. You better keep your eye on Jimbo Fisher, because I think he is the biggest threat as a recruiter and as a staff and as a facility and all the intangibles. I think you better keep your eye on Texas A&M, because I think they're going to make the most progress over the next 5 years in trying to knock Alabama off the top in the West.
Yeah, and it was kind of – they had kind of a year like Alabama where they signed so many great prospects in December that they didn't have a lot of fireworks on Wednesday. But top 10 class, one of the best in the SEC, right there with LSU and Georgia and Bama, in the state of Texas, where everybody still recruits in the SEC because of that A&M addition. I think this is going to be right what you said. I mean, this is, you talk about a head coach recruiter, especially now that Urban Meyer is gone, at least for this cycle. When you rank the head coach recruiters, I mean, how many can you get to without getting to Jimbo Fisher? What is it, 2, 3 maybe at the most? So with his resume, he's a national champion. And like you said, he's got the resources. He understands the SEC, and he literally has experience from Texas all the way down to Florida. So that's the SEC corridor, and that's what he's going to master on. And the real questions, I think, were on the opposite side. The real questions with Jimbo Fisher were, how well is he going to do in Texas because of maybe a lack of resources there initially? And, you know, they've got the number one class out of all the schools in Texas, and that always means that you sign kids from the Lone Star State, and they did a really good job with that. DeMarvin Leal is arguably the top player in the country. He was in our discussion along with Alabama signee Antonio Alfano, who actually was the final number one player. That was a guy Bama was going all in to try to flip because of that need we just talked about on the defensive line. But he was able to hold off Nick Saban and company for a guy who we see as a first-round draft pick one day, and they've got a bevy of other prospects. But, you know, in-state, they did the best job, including Texas, which was so hot at the end of the regular season with their late stride, beating Oklahoma this year. Even still, A&M was 6 or 7 spots higher in the rankings in recruiting. So there's no doubt that Jimbo's already doing what we expected him to do over a 3 or 4 year period. He did that with his first full class in 2019. So Jimbo's there to stay. I think Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M, I think you're going to have trouble keeping at least two or three of those out of the top five every single class. And this SEC dominance that other people may be tired of, I don't know if it's going to go away anytime soon, other than the Clemson Tigers.
All right, we're talking to John Garcia of 24/7 Sports. John, we're going to hold you over. We may hold you over two more segments to talk about this because it's so good. We'll be back right here on Radio Alabama with John Garcia of 24/7 Sports.
On the Prep Sports Report Radio Network. It's the Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha Insurance. Call or text the Prep Sports Report at 251-343-0106 on the CNC Financial and Auto Sales Communication Lines. Now, back to the show.
Back in high school.
All right, back to PSR. Radio Alabama, all of our friends across the Southeast. Appreciate our buddies up at the Doubletree Hotel in Manhattan. Got a text from a few minutes ago said, talking SEC football, what about the Big Ten, the Big 12, and all those big schools? We just talk SEC right here, guys. That's what we do. So we'll keep doing that. You guys up there just keep unloading that luggage and making those tips in the Doubletree. I know you got big things going on. You go to Broadway shows all the time. We just go to casinos to watch big bands. That's all we do. So you guys have fun up there, and we sure do miss talking to you guys. Look forward to seeing you soon. Talking to John Garcia, 24/7 Sports, and John covers it about as well as anybody that we know, and he's got big compliments from a lot of our buddies along the way that have certainly know exactly what's going on in this business. But John, we have our producer here is a huge Tennessee Vol fan, and two teams that I thought really made some headway were the Tennessee Vols and the Florida Gators. Talk just a little bit about what Jeremy Pruitt did, and he did it kind of Saban way. He just kind of laid low and didn't make a whole lot of comments. But is this the class that will kind of lead the Vols back into SEC East contention?
Well, when I think of how you change a culture and how you mix it up, you know, it's the SEC. It's like you just talked about. This is what we do down here. And where does that start? Especially from the Saban perspective, it starts up front. It starts up front, and you look at the offensive line haul that Tennessee was able to put together. Wanya Morris, Darnell Wright, depending on where you look, two five-star type guys, two All-American type guys who had their pick of any school they wanted to go to.
Yeah.
And they both elected to play at Tennessee. And I would be surprised if one or both of those guys didn't start day one running out of the tee at Neyland Stadium. I think when you change a culture, this is where it starts. For Pruitt, SEC guy, Bama guy, that's what he knows, starting up front. It's a cliche, but we don't talk about it as much as we used to because of how wide open all these things are nowadays. But he's going old school with it, pro style. Big up front, go from there. And these two are maulers. They can both play guard, maybe tackle down the line. Just massive frames on each of these guys. Played great competition. Wanya at high school, Grayson High School in Georgia. Darnell Wright in the postseason circuit as an All-American and held his own. I don't think there's a more aggressive offensive lineman in the country than Darnell Wright. So, and he's, 6'5", 320, so I think physically he can hold his own in the SEC day one, which is really hard to project. So I think their class was unbelievable. They beat blue bloods all over the place for prospects. And what's impressive about getting a guy like Darnell Wright as well as Henry Toto'o, you did it out of state. You did it in places where Tennessee doesn't mean the same thing that it means like in Atlanta or in the Carolinas where they've had a lot of recruiting success. Henry Toto'o is from De La Salle, California,
yeah,
and Darnell Wright's from West Virginia, where, the prospect-wise, there's, you get a Randy Moss once every decade, maybe, and then there's a Darnell Wright once a decade, and that's kind of it. So to go out there and do it, I think, really speaks to what Pruitt is selling about the future and how soon these guys can help change the course of Tennessee football. So those guys to finish up, I think, was a huge statement. 2 years in a row now for Jeremy Pruitt. He did the same thing last year. And I know there's not a lot of in-state guys there for Tennessee, but that class isn't as strong in-state, and I think that's another mark of a good SEC recruiter. You don't recruit the state just to recruit the state. You recruit the state when those kids are worthy enough to put your uniform on, and I don't think at the top it was quite as orange and white as it should have been in terms of perception. But I think 2020, this class coming up, that state has a lot more talent at the top, and I think you'll see a lot more kids staying in-state, especially if things start to change on the field.
Do you think, John, on the Henry Toto, the guy was a tremendous linebacker, but he had been an Alabama guy for a long time, and parents and family all wanted him to go to Alabama. Do you think the changeover in coaching staff kind of led him away from Alabama? Because it was mainly him that was kind of not wanting to go to Alabama and eventually signing with Tennessee.
Yeah, I think the Tosh LePoy departure, that was one where it was almost a straight up kind of situation. If you keep Tosh, you probably get him. Yeah. If you don't, you probably don't get him. And I think the timing of it, I think the day the report surfaced of LePoy going to the Cleveland Browns, that day was the first day of a 48-hour official visit that he was on at Tennessee. So the timing of it, I think, was just, whether it was orchestrated or not, it fell right into Tennessee's lap. They closed extremely well with a young group of recruiters, not only Jeremy Pruitt, but Brian Niedermeyer was arguably the best assistant coach recruiter in the country. He's another guy who came from Bama with Pruitt, who's now coaching on that Tennessee staff. He was big there. They were ready to be a strong number two for him all the way through the process, just in case something like this happened. And you know, LePoy leaves, and then everything starts to shift. Now, Bama got him on campus the following weekend, but it just wasn't the same. It wasn't the same pull that he had with Tennessee, and that rapport with LePoy, I think, was really the X factor. I mean, LePoy went to De La Salle, same high school that Henry is coming out of. Tennessee's got a guy on that staff who came from that high school as well. So even in terms of familiarity and West Coast recruiting prowess, once LePoy was gone following the departures of Lane Kiffin the last couple of years, Bama's West Coast, you know, vibe is kind of slowing down. Bama didn't sign one kid from California in this class for the first time in, I think, three or four cycles. So it's kind of shifting a little bit with Alabama, and Tennessee is adding resources out that way, and obviously it all worked out with Henry Toto. But I do think this one was very simple. If you have Tosh, you get him.
Right.
If you don't, he probably goes to the SEC elsewhere.
And you look in Mobile, Alabama's backyard, you look at Ladarius Cox. He was on Tennessee for a while. Auburn made the late push, winds up going to Ole Miss. Also, DJ James establishing the West Coast connection and committing to Oregon to play football for Coach Cristobal. Those were kind of two shockers in our backyard. And preferred walk-ons, you look at Flip Rudolph from Cottage Hill and Jermaine Brown, who were also phenomenal players here locally along the Gulf Coast, had a lot of success. Talk to us about what you know about those guys.
Yeah, well, you know, Cox, I thought a lot of people expected him to flip from Tennessee. I was in that group, but I thought it would be Auburn. I thought that's where he would flip to. But Ole Miss reminding us that they can close a little bit, too. They got five-star running back Jerrion Ealy. They flipped Ladarius Cox. They got a junior college linebacker, Lakia Henry, who was also a one-time Tennessee Vol commitment. So Ole Miss closed well down the stretch. I think they've got a lot of ties to the state of Alabama. They signed a bunch of kids from the state, as they typically do. Tyler Siski, Freddie Roach on that coaching staff. So when you're talking about D linemen, I think that was where Cox was really leaning towards. He wants to play D line. I project him down the road as an offensive lineman. I think he's got a higher ceiling there. But the kid wants to play on defense, which is a very common thing, and I think Ole Miss really hammered that point, and there was some doubt at Auburn and Tennessee whether or not he would flip over to the other side of the ball. So recruiting has a lot of layers, and I think Ole Miss got Cox with that one. And then DJ James, you know, Alabama was in and out on the kid. Mississippi State pushed hard, but he had so many other options because he didn't sign in December, excuse me, that – you know, he really was a nationwide recruit, and he took that official visit to Oregon, and he knew that was it. He wanted something different. He wanted something off course, and you know, he's a DB. The flash of Oregon is pretty nice for guys like that, and we know Mario Cristobal and company from their ties to the Southeast. They want kind of the perfect blend of West Coast elites, California, Washington, etc., mixed in with the mentality and the prowess of Southeastern prospects. So they're going to recruit Alabama hard. They're going to recruit Florida hard. They're going to recruit Georgia. And they sign prospects from each of those three states. So they're trying to, kind of like Tennessee, change their culture. And they ended up signing the best class they've ever signed in the 20 years that, you know, our industry has really been out there. And then with those preferred walk-ons, I mean, man, you know, those are looked down upon a little bit because it's not a scholarship day one. But how many times, I mean, you watch college football, you watch college game day. Every week, there's 6-7 guys getting scholarships who weren't on scholarships. So these kids see those things, and they know they have a shot. If they do what they believe in themselves to do, they will be on scholarship. And we've seen guys like that, like Baker Mayfield, pan out pretty good. And I think some of those guys really can turn the corner and make us wonder a couple years from now, how in the world did school X not sign that kid on scholarship and they let him go to school Y and be a PWO? Those are always sort of puzzling down the stretch, particularly with some in-state FBS schools locally and semi-locally that make you scratch your head. But hey, the kids are betting on themselves, and you always got to respect them.
Hey, John, let's hold you over for one more segment. We'll wind this up, okay?
Sounds good.
We'll be back with more PSR right here from Mobile, Alabama, talking SEC football.
PSR is live every Saturday from 8 until 10 a.m. Now, back to your hosts, Rick Cleveland, Mark Lasseter, and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome back to Prep Sports Report. We're talking to John Garcia of 24/7 Sports, and we're talking SEC football. But I do want to ask this because I think, John, if I'm not mistaken, you're pretty doggone familiar with what's going on in Miami as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Miami, and my family makes sure that I keep up with what's going on down there, and they had a lot of questions this time around.
I think one of the things that surprised most of us is I think all of us are big Mark Richt fans as far as a person is concerned and the way he runs a program and his sudden retirement and Manny Diaz taking the Temple job and all of a sudden turning around and, you know, resigning there and coming home to Miami. And I think all of that was kind of interesting to all of us. But they stepped into here in Daphne, Alabama, and got a defensive back that everybody thought was committed to Alabama, but ends up Christian Williams inks with Manny Diaz and the Miami Hurricanes. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, you know, we started, you know, he took the official visit a couple weeks before signing day, and we were hearing that everything was going well, but the position of his trips had him taking one to LSU just days before signing day, and we knew LSU really wanted the kid, and we, you know, LSU's had a nice corridor to Mobile here in the last few cycles, and it all just, and he's a DB, right? So it all just kind of seemed like a layup for LSU. But, you know, about Tuesday, so 24 hours out, we started hearing, hey, you know, the kid might be headed to Miami. He wants to do something different, and he wants to kind of be the guy. And Miami had struggled with defensive back recruiting here recently, and LSU, of course, hasn't. So, you know, the opportunity, I think, was a 180. From between LSU, Alabama, and Miami in the defensive backfield. And I think if playing time was a priority and if doing something different also was, then it was a slam dunk for Christian, and that's what he did. You know, he was really respectful through the process. He called LSU Tuesday and said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to Miami. And Alabama had long known that he wasn't going to sign there. So, you know, a big get for Miami and a needed get for Miami. Like, I mean, heck, any guy you sign who has a chance to play early is massive. And look, the ACC, I mean, they got to, if they make it to the ACC title game, it's probably going to be Trevor Lawrence sitting on the other side. So any blue chip All-American defensive back you can put on your roster is going to help with that tough task. So that was big for Miami. Didn't have the best close, but he ended up being kind of the gem of their class, and it's always good to see traditional powers, if anything, come back into Alabama and recruit well. And the last DB they signed from the state ended up starting several years, and he's going to play in the NFL. Michael Jackson out of Spain Park High School in Birmingham. He'll hear his name called here in a few months. So it's always good to see schools coming back into Alabama. And with some coaching turnover, we're seeing Oregon, Miami, Kansas with Les Miles, Louisville, a lot of other schools coming into Alabama to recruit, which is for me is always kind of a welcome sight because, you know, they can't all go to Alabama, Auburn, and even stay in the SEC.
You know, Coach, there, Jeff, there was a guy that I kept up with a pretty good bit was Neil Brown leaving, going to West Virginia. He was at Troy, as you know, and I'm just wondering, how did they finish up? How did they close out? I know it was right in the middle of the recruiting season for him, so it must have been tough.
Yeah, it's similar to Manny Diaz. You know, there was weeks left in the cycle, so always hard, and I think even harder, really, for Neil Brown because there was less familiarity. Like you guys said, Miami's home for Manny.
Right.
Not the case for Neil Brown. But all things considered, he did well. You know, a lot of West Virginia fans focus on the fact that they didn't keep Darnell Wright home, the five-star we talked about who ended up at Tennessee. But other than that, I think they closed pretty well. They got guys that in the past have made West Virginia successful. Skill guys, guys who can win one-on-one matchups. And of course, they dipped into Alabama as well, which you sort of expect now going forward with the ties to the state of Alabama with Neil Brown and company. So I think they had a strong close, relatively speaking, again, with the asterisk that they didn't get Darnell Wright. But on such short notice, I don't know what those fans truly expected. I look for West Virginia to have a very strong class with a lot of Southern influence for 2020. So the kids who are rising seniors, now that Neil Brown can get his footing and have an entire cycle to recruit. I just think it's so hard for these guys going to new places with such short notice. And especially when you had another gig. If you're Les Miles and you go to Kansas, it's really a fresh start and you can kind of go all in from the jump. But if you're Neil Brown, you're navigating former commitments. Which Troy targets do you emphasize? Really hard to navigate in addition to new territories and a new part of the country. So I thought he did a nice blend of each, and I really liked the corner they got out of Montgomery. Tecori Turner had some academic issues late in the cycle, made it a little bit dicey, but 6'2", 185, really competitive kid who can play corner, and if all else fails, definitely has some ability as a safety. And in the Big 12, I mean, heck, you need as many good long DBs ball skills as you can, and he's that. So I thought that was a really nice get back home, a former Troy commitment. So that sort of fit.
We're speaking with John Garcia Jr. from 24/7 Sports. I call him the football recruiting guru. You look forward to class of 2020 now. You just mentioned some of those guys here locally along the Gulf Coast. Demoy Kennedy, the linebacker from Theodore, will probably pop right off on you. Chris Abrams Drain is another one from Spanish Fort who will be highly recruited from right here along the Gulf Coast. And you know, it goes even further. St. Paul's and Saraland have a lot of local players that are right in the loop. Jordan Ingram, the running back from St. Paul's. Daniel Foster Allen, who verbally committed to Auburn here recently. Talk to us about the 2020 prospects across the state of Alabama in these last 3 minutes that we have with you.
Yeah, you know, I think 2020 and especially 2021, and we'll get to that, you know, next year, Mobile is going to be kind of on the come up, on the rebound. It's been a little up and down the last few cycles, but I think 2020 is really going to be starting to turn the corner down there, just in terms of in-state recruiting and in terms of what we expect from Mobile. And I think those guys you mentioned are all certainly in that conversation. One of the guys I think is going to be a big riser is Jordan Ingram. I think he is so intriguing. 6'3", 205 right now. A very good running back, but you know, his brother's 6'5" basketball player. Jordan tells me he's a better basketball player than Dazon up at Alabama. So how tall does he get? Just the Derrick Henry conversation is going to happen at some point with Jordan Ingram. A lot of schools thought Derrick Henry could be an All-American outside linebacker, but Jordan's already as tall as Derrick. So what happens in the next year or so as he continues to grow? Can he be a jumbo running back or an H-back, maybe even an outside linebacker? I think the athleticism and overall package he brings is so interesting, and his recruitment could come down to what Derrick Henry did. Which schools are going to let me run the football and which schools aren't? It was that simple at points for Derrick. So I'm really curious to see physically how Jordan Ingram matures. And he's a darn good ball player, even if he is just a running back. So I think that alone can get him into the SEC. I know Auburn wants him to play that position. So he's going to be a guy I'm really focused on. You mentioned St. Paul's. They've got a bunch of dudes in 2020 with Foster Allen, Brady Ward, 6'7". Offensive lineman, SEC legacy, who Oklahoma just offered and is pushing for. I'm hearing Clemson is very interested in him, so he's a guy we're going to be talking about a lot more going forward in 2020. You mentioned Drain. You know, when are the in-state schools going to push there? Longtime LSU commitment, for my money, the most explosive offensive player in the state, even if you included the 2019 guys who just signed on Wednesday. He's one I'm very focused on. Can he play corner elsewhere? That's kind of the X factor for his recruitment. I think he's got some nice corner ability with that explosion as well. So 2020, I think, is going to be really strong down there. And there's kids emerging every day. Baldwin County's got a couple of guys. Albany Casey, I'm a big fan of. A big, strong side defensive lineman who can really hold the point and rush the passer on occasion. You need that in the SEC. Looking for his recruitment to uptick as well. So I'll be very focused on Mobile in 2020. I'll be down there a bunch. I may have to come through and say hi to you guys.
You know what? And I'm going to add a name to that, and one that you probably don't have on your radar, but I think you should have it on there. He's a young man by the name of Will Breedland at UMS Wright. We've been doing this, Mark and I, you could put us together. We've been doing this for 80 years, and I think this is a kid that can play for a lot of people. And I hope you'll put his name on there, because he's one that's a special, special player. He can play a lot of different positions. He's playing an inside linebacker at UMS, but he comes from a quality program. They know nothing but winning. And he's some kind of player, John, I can tell you that. He'll be something special.
Yeah, we like him at the Super 7, and as productive a linebacker as anybody in the state as a junior. So once you get the measurables and see him in a camp setting and what he can do in space, I think he's a guy whose stock is only going to rise because of the foundation he's got there with Terry Curtis and company. Absolutely. Good call.
John, thank you so much. You are the guy that we want to talk to when it comes to recruiting, and we certainly appreciate you, and God send, God bless you, and we look forward to talking to you down the road, pal.
Too kind, fellas, and likewise. Take care of yourself.
All right.
Thank you,
buddy.
Thanks, John.
We'll see you soon, John. That's John Garcia. You can catch him at 24/7 Sports, and, you know, when the people that we respect the most tell us, Coach, that's the guy you want to talk to, then that's who we go after. Good job, Corey. We'll be back with the faith segment, the Camp Grace segment, one that you speak highly of, right here on Prep Sports Report.